Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast presented by KFC. I'm your host, William Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada. On this week's episode, I have the Score's senior NBA writer, Joe Scajaro.
What's going on?
It's good times, man.
Yeah.
We're going to shout out Pound the Rock right out top, or what are we going to do?
Yeah, whatever you want to do, man. It's your show. It's your show.
Wow, okay. It feels like old times. It really does. So, mostly we're here to talk about Kobe. I know that this has sort of been the story ever since the tragedy occurred on Sunday when Kobe, at the age of 41, along with his 13-year-old daughter Gianna and also seven other passengers, died in a helicopter crash. Some details are now emerging from the crash. They're so impossibly sad to read. Apparently there was a fog, and that sort of, I guess, indirectly led to some of this stuff. But, you know, with someone as important as Kobe, I mean, it's hard not to just spend so much time memorializing him, because I think it's worth it. Like, there's that many good Kobe stories out there.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy was the epitome of an icon. You know, like, people throw out the word icon a lot, and they throw out the word transcendent a lot when it comes to talents. But this guy was the true definition of both those words, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was an icon in the game.
Yeah.
And wherever you rank him in terms of all-time greats is another matter, but you can't deny that he's near the top, or at the top, in terms of straight up influence and being beloved by his peers. Because you talk to any players in the NBA and they worship this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I wrote about, that like everything about Kobe, the Mamba mentality, the aura around him, like whatever, it was gospel to a lot of these players and
to the
league. And it's honestly hard to imagine like watching NBA ball feel normal again. Now, obviously, we'll get to a point when it does.
Right.
Because things, you know, you just heal.
Life goes on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in the immediate aftermath, it really is hard to imagine the NBA the same ever again.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it really says something about Kobe's global impact and outreach. I saw that you retweeted how the Italian town that his dad played in, where Kobe grew up as a kid. And Kobe still speaks fluent Italian?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Well, he spent his formative years there, right? He spent from the ages of 6 to 13 there.
But that's still, though.
Yeah.
That's really impressive that he held on to that.
And the cool thing, too, all that is that, like, because his dad played in different parts of Italy, he kind of, he played in the north, and Kobe grew up in the north. Kobe grew up in the deep south in Calabria, where my family's from.
Yeah.
And he's even talked about how he like picked up the slang in each. So like he even spoke like dialects from each region. Like they really considered him an adopted son in those towns, you know?
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, I was retweeting some of the stuff from Italy yesterday. One of the places that dad played in the north, they're naming their new gym, I think, after him or something.
Right.
You know, the newspapers there are all,
AC Milan was wearing.
Yeah. I mean, he was a huge AC Milan fan. So he had a famous quote where he said, if you cut his left arm, it bleeds black and red.
Wow.
And if you cut his right arm, it bleeds purple and gold.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So.
I was going to say. That's really impressive. It's just, I think it speaks to like a global impact that he had, which I think, and we'll get to sort of Kobe's specific connection with the Raptors and obviously a lot of intersections there. But just generally, like if you think about the time in which Kobe came into the NBA, that was at the point where the game was about to go global. Like, I think Magic and Bird really sort of made it America's game, made it definitely a very serious game. Because before that, let's be real, the NBA wasn't taking this seriously.
The finals were on tape delay.
They were literally on tape delay, right? You have that happen. You have Michael Jordan sort of taking that into, you know, the next level. Yeah. And then Kobe sort
Dream
of...
Dream team, too.
But just carrying it on. Like, yeah. He was a great ambassador in terms of just globally. Like, I think about, obviously, the Dream Team, 08, him leading that team.
The Spanish team, yeah.
The Spanish team was about to take them.
And Ricky, Kobe stepped up. Kobe stepped went up. Mamba in the, yep. in the fourth quarter. Yeah, fourth quarter, I think. Like, late third, yeah. fourth quarter of that game.
And, yeah. And it wasn't like, I mean, that was a team that was a little strange. It was in transition because LeBron was younger and stuff like that. LeBron obviously had a lot of great plays. Dwayne Wade had a lot of great plays. But that team was Kobe's team. It really was. And it sort of propelled him in that way. It also made him a champion again because, like, there was a weird stretch in Kobe's career there where he was kind of, like, a great player for sure. But, like, that, I mean, the year he averaged 35, like, his team got bounced in the first round. Yeah.
Well, and you know the big thing was whether he could win one without Shaq, right?
Yeah.
And the 2008 Redeem Team
yeah.
happened in that middle period
yeah.
between his last Shaq partner title and his first one without him. So
yeah,
it was big for him.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of the global outreach, like he's so beloved. Like you see like these like tributes from like the Philippines, for example, like the most famous court in the Philippines. You know they painted over the whole floor and everything. They painted into a Kobe mural, and you know it's impressive. I remember in the last couple of seasons, I remember we were in the office and we were just like, you know, watch these press conferences, and we would kind of chuckle at it because yeah. Kobe would answer questions from reporters all over the world, especially yeah. in this last season. He yeah. got it was international media. We're not yeah. just talking about you know just the regular beat media.
Yeah,
and him answering questions in Italian and then Spanish and then English and just him talking shit to
Luka Doncic in Slovenian?
Yeah, like what? Come on, yeah, man.
That's Kobe, stuff. He was one of a kind, and that's kind of what I meant too when I said he defined not just being an icon, but being transcendent. Like there are very few athletes,
yeah,
especially in American sports, that truly transcend like borders, mm-hmm. transcend the lines of the game, and are just global phenomenons. Yeah. Not even just as an athlete, like just
yeah.
as an entity.
No, and he pushed the game forward. And, you know, even like Joel Embiid saying he was growing up in Cameroon and he watched like the 2010 finals. And he's like, this Kobe guy's amazing. I'm going to try to be yeah. like him and shoot 6 of 24 against Marc Gasol. but anyway, yeah, in terms of Kobe and the Raptors, obviously there's a lot of connections. We'll leave the 81-point game for a little later on. But I think
real quick, because yeah. you mentioned the 6 for 24 against. I mean, that kind of could have been a Kobe tribute. Because do you remember Game 7 of the 2010 Finals when yeah. everyone was upset that Kobe got Finals MVP? Because yeah. I'm pretty sure he shot 6 of 24 in that yeah. Game 7. Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it was 8 of 24. But
no, I think it was 6 of 24. Yeah. But he got a lot of rebounds that game. Yeah. Powell had a really good game
yeah. in
Game
7. Poor Powell never got that Finals MVP.
Man. But if Kendrick Perkins was healthy... Kendrick Perkins was healthy yeah, shooting those turnaround jump shots.
Celtics, they really believe that.
Ubuntu undefeated. So, yeah, in terms of Kobe and the Raptors, we'll get to the 81-point game. But I think the most recent memory, obviously, is that 2016 All-Star game. First off, that weekend, just the legendary All-Star weekend in general, right? Like, obviously, the weather was, like, comically bad, even for Toronto. Yeah. It was, like, minus 20, and you couldn't yeah. go outside. But, like, just the actual festivities itself, it was amazing. Like, you were there during the whole thing. What are your memories from the 2016 All-Star game?
Man, so, like, tragically enough, one of my memories was Kobe doing one of his press conferences that weekend with John on his lap. And that's, like, one thing I thought of when it happened. But I do remember that whole weekend just being, like, the Kobe appreciation. I mean, that whole season was Kobe appreciation year, right?
But and it got almost ridiculous. But did. In retrospect, you're like, of course, that's how I went. Because yeah. Kobe meant this much to everybody.
Exactly.
Like, remember when he announced that he was going to retire that day in Washington, they were going to play. And then everyone in the crowd, at the D.C. crowd, they have no connection to yeah. Kobe, really. But they started chanting his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's... He was special like that, right? His impact was special like that. But yeah, that, I remember from that weekend it just being kind of like the Kobe appreciation weekend. But I also remember towards the end of the actual All-Star game when LeBron guarded Kobe.
Yeah.
He like smacked the floor and they yeah. kind of like locked eyes and the crowd went nuts. I think that was like the defining memory for me of that right. weekend.
Yeah, and people forget that. So Kobe took the pump fake like a couple times, and then took a fadeaway, and he missed a shot. But it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter. It's just that moment was amazing. And honestly, like LeBron and Kobe never actually meeting in a playoff setting is just...
It sucks.
It really sucks, man. Yeah. LeBron screwed up in 09. It was supposed to happen in 09.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the year.
When the Magic beat them.
Yeah, Hedo Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis both...
You just couldn't deny that team of destiny in Orlando, man.
Turns out they were both on steroids.
Jesus.
No, it was true, though. Yeah. It was true. And then the Raptors signed Hedo. yeah, that All-Star weekend, I mean, like, first off, Kobe, 1.9 million votes, which was the most in the NBA. Obviously, he was going to go to the All-Star game, but still, like, it's just a reflection of his popularity. Like, I mean, you know, LeBron basically wins it every single year. It's by default, but that year, obviously, Kobe took it from him. I remember, in just watching back some of the highlights on YouTube and preparing for this show, him warming up with Zaire Wade.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
You know, it was like, if we think about Dwayne Wade's son taking instructions from anybody else, you don't need to. You have Dwayne Wade as your
dad.
But
then Kobe walks in the gym.
Yeah, and then he's like learning how to like guard a fadeaway and how to shoot a fadeaway, and Kobe's teaching him these small tricks to Zaire, and like, you know, Chris Paul Jr., who's like a toddler and just running around on the court and stuff like that. Like, everybody wanted a piece of Kobe, but it was very much like clear in that year that like Kobe wanted to pass the game on. And I thought that was really cool of him, because, you know, a lot of players leave the game and then they get bitter about the game.
Yep.
Kobe left the game and he just wanted to make it better. You know what I mean? It wasn't about him. It wasn't necessarily about a philosophy. It's not Charles Barkley going inside the NBA every day and being like, you got to get in the post, you know? Kobe just wanted to share that skill set. Yep. And then, you know, him launching the academy and everything like that is great to see.
Yep.
That All-Star game was amazing. In terms of the Raptors and Kobe intersecting, 81-point game, do you remember where you were?
I was at home watching it on a Sunday. And
I think it was on the score.
I think you might have been right. Yeah. And I remember the Raptors having a big-ish lead like midway through the third quarter.
It was 20-plus.
There you go. I think Mike James was having a big game.
Okay.
And Kobe took over, and I remember being very upset. I remember wondering why they weren't making it more difficult for him. I remember wondering why they weren't double team. Like, I just remember being very, 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 very upset.
It was humiliating. But then in retrospect, it was good to be part of history, I guess.
Honestly, yeah, it really was. And I understand that sounds like such a defeatist attitude, mm-hmm. because the team we root for was on the very wrong end of history.
Yeah.
But A, the title makes everything easier to swallow in hindsight. And mm-hmm. B, it's just whatever, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was I mean, I'm a little bit happy that it happened against the Raptors. I really am. Obviously, Kobe goes off for 81 points in 42 minutes. He shoots 28 of 46 from the field, 7 of 13 from three. The thing is, that's not necessarily that hot of a game. It's the sheer volume and the fact that he got to the free throw line 20 times.
Do you know what I think is hilarious?
What?
That he took more shots in his final game 60-point performance than he did in his 81. Do you remember watching that in the scores war room and we were going nuts?
Yeah. No, that was crazy because that last game of the season was really eventful, right? Remember, because
the Warriors set the record that day too, the 73-win season.
Yeah, yeah. Steph, they were in Memphis or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
The Memphis are like, yeah, and we were watching like the playoff race. I think Sacramento had to Houston has to beat Sacramento to make the playoffs. Yeah. And we were just covering all these other storylines. And then the last one of the night, we're like pretty tired. I had already left. My shift was over. And I went across the street to the bar.
I remember that. You came back.
And then I was watching this game, and I was like, in the start of the fourth quarter, I was like, Kobe has like 40-something? Yeah. I'm like, I got to go back to the office. Yeah. And I came back. And like, the end of that game was just insane. Like, they really had to – they needed every single basket.
No, they really did. Yeah. And it was like the perfect – there was no more perfect way for Kobe Bryant to leave the NBA than that. Like
– taking 50 shots?
Honestly, emptying the clip.
Yeah. No, for sure.
I would have – no other way would have done him justice, you know? Him having like a 5-for-11 game.
Yeah.
And is that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. No, like, what the hell?
Empty the clip and go out Mamba style.
It's a meaningless game. It had no playoff implication. The Jazz were already eliminated and everything like that. No, it was a legendary game. But, I mean, even the 81-point game, like the thing is, no one else on this team was good. That people forget this, man. Like, he was playing with Chris Mim, Kwame Brown, Smush Parker, and Lamar Odom. And Lamar Odom is the best player on that team, outside of Kobe, obviously. He shot 1-7 in that game. Yeah. So it wasn't even like Lamar was killing them. Like, every single guy on that team is bad. They got two total baskets off the bench. Sasha Vujicic hit a 3, and Brian Cook had a 2. That's it. They got 5 total points off the bench.
That team was so bad.
So, again, why did Sam Mitchell double Kobe, man?
What are we doing? I don't know. Maybe Sam Mitchell's like us. Maybe he's like, you know what? I'm okay being on the wrong end of history.
Sam Mitchell's like, yo, you're going to remember me forever.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm the guy who didn't double Kobe.
I didn't double Kobe, and another time I said 0-0-0-0-0.
No, this, yeah, I mean, and the funny thing with these games against the Lakers, and I went back and sort of watched a couple of them, it's just all of them, the Raptors were usually in the lead,
yeah,
and then Kobe came back. And, the, you know, this game, I mean, I remember Chuck Swirsky almost put out salami and cheese. He sort of mentioned it. Like, he was like, I might even start bringing it out. And Leo was like, come on, you're not going to bring it out? Come on, the Lakers score got nothing. It's a Sunday night. The Raptors are up 20. You know, Mike James is 26 points.
Chuck knew.
Chuck was like, no, relax.
There's a killer on the court.
Yeah, Kobe was like literally on a – he came off 60 points in three quarters against the Mavericks, and then he does the 81 thing. It's ridiculous. Like, shout out Phil Jackson for leaving Kobe in the game so he can get all his points. Because at a certain point, the Lakers had definitely won the game, but Kobe was like, no, I'm not coming out of this game.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going for it.
Yeah. Like, amazing. Jalen Rose, obviously, also just commemorated in that case.
Yeah.
I also looked up, Kobe had three game winners against the Raptors.
Okay, so let me see if I remember. I did see your tweet.
Yeah, yeah.
There was the one in Toronto, I think in Dwayne Casey's first year on the job. Is that when...
That was during the Achilles, when he tore his Achilles at the very end of the season. But Kobe sacrificed everything to get them into the playoffs.
What? Who? Someone messed up an inbounds, didn't they?
Yes.
Oh, wasn't it Jamal McGlure?
I don't know. Was it Jamal Glore
missed free throw? There was a game I remember against the Lakers in Dwayne Casey's first year, the first post-lockout year, when the Raptors had Jamal McGlure. And I remember them being like in a tight game against the Lakers and Kobe winning it, not at the buzzer, but with like a late game winner. And I could have sworn it was either like a missed McGlure free throw or a bad inbounds or something. Yeah. I have to go back and watch it. But there was some like very Raptors-esque mistake in there.
Oh, my God. No, I mean, it's funny when you look at that team because all those guys are still in the NBA, like, and which is rare when you watch old Raptor games. Rudy Gay is on the floor. Kyle Lowry is on the floor. DeMar DeRozan is on the floor. Amir Johnson is on the floor. The fifth guy that we're closing out with in that game was either Allen Anderson, who played an obscene amount of time for Dwayne Casey. Allen Anderson always got so many minutes.
Kobe also had that classic shot over Allen Anderson in L.A.
Yeah, that was this game. No.
Oh, you're talking about the one in L.A.?
I'm talking about the one March 8, 2013. I think that was in Toronto.
Okay.
So I think Toronto. But there's that GIF where, you know, when people are always talking about, like, shooting your shot on Twitter or something like that, right? There's that one where Kobe, like, pump fakes. Allen Anderson's playing great defense.
Yeah.
Sitting
Kobe
on
just
him,
rises up.
And he just pump fakes twice and he rises up and he hits the buzzer beating three. That was this game. He hits that three. Up four at the Raptors, 31 seconds. Kobe hits a turnaround jumper off an inbound in the corner, hits a three. In that situation, you just want to deny a three. And then the Lakers down three, short clock situation, he inbounds on the other side of the floor, pump fakes Amir Johnson out the air, and shoots a three over Rudy Gay at the buzzer to force overtime. And then in overtime, Aaron Gray comes over and doubles him at half court for some reason, late, and it's Aaron Gray.
That's who you want. That's who you want trapping at the top, Aaron Gray. He can recover.
Yeah, and then Kobe drove right past and dunked it on the team, man. And that was game over. He had 41, 6, and 12 that game.
Jesus.
That was March 8, 2013. The year before that, February 12th, 2012, Raptors up four with under a minute left. This is in Toronto.
This is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. Dwayne Casey's first year, post-lockout year in Toronto.
Right. Linus Klaza?
Yes. This is definitely the one I'm thinking of. Jamal McGlure was...
He was on the team.
Yeah.
He was on the team. I think this is the year he's on the team. But, yeah, Raptors up four with under a minute left. Jack on the broadcast screams, no threes, no threes here. You don't want to give up a three because they're up four with under a minute left. You don't want to give up a three. And then Kobe pulls up over Linus Klaza for three. Hits it. And then the next play, Klaza tries to go one-on-one against Kobe. Think about these games we're watching. We're watching Linus Klaza trying to go one-on-one.
Linus Klaza had he had that very prototypical, like, no self-awareness, Euro confidence. I'm just going to throw it out there. Anyway, I could say that as a European, son of European immigrants. Right?
You had the Marco Bellinelli confidence?
But you know what? Bellinelli has a little bit of reason to have that confidence. Like, Linus Klaza was the ultimate, like, oh, I'm coming from pro ball in Europe. Like, I got this. Like, nope, you don't.
No. Yeah, Klaza tried to go one-on-one on Kobe. Kobe steals it off of Klaza. I think I don't know if the Lakers score there, but the Raptors somehow get up. They're up in the game. And then Kobe gets the inbound pass. Again, like 4 seconds left. And then he goes to the corner, and then he hits a turnaround jump shot. Pretty much the same place Kawhi hit.
Yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
The same spot, obviously the same building. And he hits it over James Johnson. Again, we're closing games with Linus Klaza and James Johnson against Kobe. And Kobe hits the game winner. He finished with 27 points that game. And then, obviously, before that, this one I don't even remember at all. March 9, 2010. Do you remember this at all?
March 9th, 2010. So this would have been the last Bosch season.
I don't know if he was sitting out games with his face again.
Was this in L.A.?
This was in L.A., yeah.
No, I don't really remember this one.
I didn't remember this one either until I looked it up. But Kobe, again, short clock situation with the Lakers down one, had the last possession. Kobe drives baseline, pulls up, pretty much the same shot over James Johnson. But he pulls up for two and he switches it. The guy guarding him in that situation, Antoine Wright.
Jesus.
So, yeah. The Kobe had 36-6-6 in that game. So this man had three game winners in the same team.
Against one French. Yeah, no, his, that's, I mean, obviously, and that doesn't even include the 81 yeah. point performance. Like his, the way he tortured the Raptors was
yeah.
LeBron second to none until LeBron, yeah, came around and dominated them every year. But I think even then, like, there was always something with Kobe. It was like a love-hate thing. Where
yeah, definitely.
You could hate him because he was killing your team.
You hate him because his fans are so ridiculous.
Right, and that was a big thing for me. Like, for me, it was never hating necessarily his game. It was hating the, like, rings and buckets culture of his super fans, like, of his stands.
Yeah.
But there was still an element with him, and I don't know if it was maybe that relentless competitiveness that you and, like, his work ethic that you just had to admire and respect. Yeah. But even when you hated him as a foe,
yeah.
I challenge anyone to say that they didn't, like, deep down be like, God damn it, I respect that man.
Oh, of
you
course,
know?
Man. As a basketball player, it's impossible to deny. Like, you can't separate. Like, basketball as a sport is almost like tennis. Like, you get carried through the eras by these individual, like, individuals.
The truly transcendent ones.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the sport of basketball, it was Magic and Bird, and then it was Michael, and then it was Kobe, and now it's LeBron. And we don't know who's going to be next. We're not really sure. But Kobe, undeniably, for his 20 years, the amount of, like, just contributions that he made for basketball is, you know, I think you see it now in sort of just, like, how many players he touched. Like, somehow every single player in the NBA has a Kobe story, has a connection to Kobe.
Yep.
There's, like, all these, like, even Jimmy Fallon has a story about Kobe.
Did you see that last night? Him, like, bawling and talking about that? And yeah, no, it's
like, they go on a beer run together.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kobe flashes and he's like, yo, I'm on the Lakers.
This is when he was 17, too. Like, clearly underage.
Yeah. Legendary stuff, man.
Yeah, man. He.
And you look at all the players on the Raptors now. Like, you know, Norm, Kyle, Fred, Stanley. Like, even former Raptor DeMar DeRozan.
Yep. No, he touched a lot of lives, man. I guess. Yeah. And especially through basketball. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't deny, wherever you rank him as a player in the, like, GOATs debate, you can't deny his, like, influence and how beloved he was. Like, in terms of those measures, he is at or near the top.
Yeah. No, he's really the Michael of this generation. I think generationally there will always be a Michael.
Yeah.
And then we can debate which generation's Michael, quote-unquote, was the best.
Yeah.
Like, we do it already. Michael, LeBron, Kobe.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, yeah, he's not, maybe not necessarily his production as a basketball player, but that's not really important. I think it at the end of the day, sports is not even necessarily about, you know what I mean? Like, it's like debating, like, Maradona versus Pele or, like, versus, like, Messi. It's like, obviously, you can't compare the numbers. You can't really compare the styles. You can't put them in different eras. You can really just only, like, compare their cultural impact.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So,
and Kobe's basically second to none there.
Yeah, he really is. And you know, our buddy Blake Murphy at The Athletic, had a great piece after that Spurs-Raptors game. And he had a lot of great quotes from players talking about what you know, Kobe meant to them. And DeMar said, Kobe meant everything. Everything I learned came from Kobe, everything. Take Kobe away, I wouldn't be here.
There's a lot of players that feel that way, man.
And, you know, like, even Fred VanVleet, who I never even thought, he never brought up Kobe. He's not like, he doesn't wear 24. He's from Rockford, which is right outside Chicago. You would think he'd be an MJ guy. He said, quote, I've never been a fan of anybody in my life other than Kobe. Like, that's the only person I ever looked up to as an idol. You know? And Fred's not a guy who's clout chasing.
No. Ever. I mean, that's why he said it himself. Like, there's one guy.
Yeah.
He allowed himself to feel that way about, and it was Kobe.
Yeah. So, it's super tragic, man. And all the tributes in the coming days and weeks and stuff like that. I mean, I'm happy the NBA, you know, postpone that Lakers Clipper game. That would have been just too raw of a situation to put the players into. It's a little surprising they let the other players play, but I guess that's a decision they made. But yeah, there'll be a lot of tributes. and, you know, just across the world, you know? Like, yeah. I saw, like, the UConn's women nationals, women's team.
For Gianna, yeah.
Yeah, put out that tribute, you know, put a jersey on for Gianna, and, like, that was her dream. Her dream was to go to UConn.
Yeah.
You know? And, again, life doesn't make sense that way. You got a 41-year-old and a 13-year-old die in a plane crash along with a lot of other people. It just
on their way to a youth basketball game or academy, you know, that it's heartbreaking in every sense, man.
It really is. And but you know, life moves on. It definitely does. It'll be difficult. I'm sure there'll be a lot of memories and things like that to come out of the coming days. So you know the Raptors, we'll talk about the Raptors. We'll talk about the Raptors now. You know, the Raptors are now 1-7 straight, which is good. I think we kind of anticipated this in terms of just them hitting a softer spot in the schedule. They were briefly in second, but then Miami played Orlando, and Orlando is trash. So the Raptors are now back to third because they don't have the tiebreaker against Miami. Right. That tiebreaker actually might come down to be important. Miami doesn't really seem like they're going to slow down.
Yeah.
I know these are probably the two teams in the East that you're hottest about, Miami and Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, obviously, other than Milwaukee, who's just kind of in a class of their own, but
whatever. whatever. They're like 41-6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're only on a 71 win pace. Yeah, I think out of the rest of the East contenders, I've been highest on the Raptors and the Heat, and I've like talked about why with the Heat. They have a superstar that can take over games and take over series. They're balanced on both sides. They
have a lot of shooting.
They have a lot of shooting.
Yeah.
They can muck up a game if they need to. They are a terror to play against. Like, you don't want to play a long series against that team.
They've got a smart coach too.
Yeah. So like I think that team is well built for the playoffs. And then the Raptors, obviously, I mean, they're legitimately a championship team. Like, even without Kawhi and Danny. But yeah, the tiebreaker is probably going to come into play here, unless the Heat slow down or the Raptors really take off. You know, and it might be what decides the All-Star coaching situation too, right? Yeah. Because if you look at the schedules this week, I think you can really kind of assume they are going to go into Sunday tied or come out of next Sunday tied.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, Spoelstra gets it because of that tiebreaker, because the Heat are 2-0 against the Raptors this year.
Right. So it's whoever's team has the best record on the start of Monday, February the 3rd.
Right. At the end of the Sunday games.
Yeah. The only good thing is the Raptors have more games to play. One game extra to play.
Oh, so basically if they win out, they're good.
If they win out. And, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily just assume the Raptors win out because they do play at 1.3 games in four nights over the coming days. They play Thursday, Friday, and then they play Sunday. But we're talking about the Hawks. We're talking about Cleveland. We're talking about Detroit. And we're talking about Chicago. Like, it does not get softer than that.
The only one, maybe, is Detroit on the back-to-back.
Yeah.
But the Pistons are pretty bad, man.
Like, The Sekou Ndomboya hype is... I'm happy for him. He's the youngest player in the NBA. Yeah. Like, he's playing well. And, you know, it's just... You always want to support a guy like that. But the amount of... hype around it is a little sad because, like, I can't believe Sekou Ndomboya is the one thing that's getting these people excited.
Well, I think that's what happens when you have a team that's that bad and a team that's been that desperate for so long, right? And we remember that from those Raptors days when, like, a very middling prospect has, like, a good couple weeks or shows even just, like, the smallest flash of potential, and you're all in on that guy because you just desperately need something to pop for your franchise.
Who are some of your favorite Raptors Sekou Ndomboya types?
Pops Mensah-Bonsu.
Yes, I was.
Yo, when Pops Mensah-Bonsu had that like 10-day run.
Yep.
Don't lie to me and tell me you didn't think this guy could be part of the future.
I was so hyped. You know? You know, the thing is with watching the Raptors in those years is that you weren't necessarily watching to see if they win. You're watching almost to see like statistical anomalies. Like I used to get really excited when Reggie Evans would get four rebounds in the same play because he couldn't make a layup.
No,
I'd be like, oh, Moses Malone.
You weren't watching to see whether they won that game. You were watching and hoping to God something happened in that game that gave you even an ounce of hope for the future.
Yeah, you're praying that Matt Devlin randomly screams out Punjabi for Pedro Stojakovic.
Still one of the greatest moments in franchise
history. Oh, my God. Shout out Devlin, man. One day I'm going to bring on this podcast and have him explain that because it is hard to...
Was it not because it was like Punjabi...
It was. Punjabi Heritage Night. Yeah. But why do you have to do it... on a page of three. Did he want to make a pun?
You know, my favorite Matt Devlin call to this day was Will Solomon.
Oh, yeah.
Had a turnover where he, like, jumped in the air, turned around, and threw the ball away. And Matt Devlin's call, I will never forget it, was Will Solomon. And then, like, a bit of a pause, does what he does. What in the world are you doing? Like, was in the process of saying, what in the world are you doing? And then, like, kind of corrects himself and gets back to professionalism.
Yeah. No, he's... his talents were wasted in some of those.
We're talking about Will Solomon and Reggie Evans and late career Peja being yelled having a Punjabi call.
That was why
we can understand why Pistons fans are really hype over.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, yeah. And you got to feel for the. I honestly, at this point, I kind of just feel bad for Dwayne Casey. Like it's just his team is just like.
Yeah, okay. I feel bad, but I also,
he also gets paid well. And
he gets paid very well. Yeah. And
he gets double Nurse's salary.
That's insane. But it's like, I was skeptical when he took that job. Because
yeah, I mean, he could have just waited.
Exactly. He was the reigning coach of the year. No matter what happened at the end in Toronto, he was still a hot commodity in the NBA. Clearly, by the amount of money Detroit gave him.
Yep.
So he could have waited it out for a better situation.
He could have.
For a contending situation. And
even a respectable situation.
Exactly.
If you looked at Detroit, you knew that that team is stuck.
And he went where the paper was, which I don't blame him for.
Yeah.
Because this is a guy that in his career got screwed over in Minnesota.
Got blackballed.
Right? Yep. Blackballed over things that happened, I think, at Kentucky.
Yep.
Then got screwed over in Minnesota where he had that team at 500 and they fired him and they went crap the rest of the way.
Yep.
And then weren't close to 500 for a long time.
Yep.
And I'm sure he feels like, I don't think he got screwed in Toronto, but I'm sure he feels like he did. So for him,
he feels like he got scapegoated.
Right? So he's probably looking at it as like, I'm not naive enough to think another opportunity is just going to come around. If they're offering me, if they're backing up the Brinks Trump, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, there's been like so many jobs around the NBA that, you know, you look at where, I mean, would it be inconceivable? If he waited, do you think he could have been Frank Vogel?
Maybe.
In Los Angeles right
now? Maybe.
Yeah. Like he probably, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, he does have, anyway.
But that's what I'm saying. Like so I don't blame him for taking the money in Detroit, but I also now don't feel bad that that's what he's left with because.
That's fair.
He did make that decision.
Yeah. And he's still in the league. Still, you know what I mean? And everyone goes through it. It just sucks he has to go through it again. But the Raptors winning 7 straight. Honestly, this win streak could really extend further. Again, you know, it's hard to just assume. But I mean, remember the start of the season. They were beating every single under 500 team. And all they have coming up are under 500 teams. If they win out, Nick Nurse can coach the All-Star game because Mike Budenholzer cannot do it 2 years in a row. Nick Nurse will then be coaching Team Giannis. And, you know, it's just... just a nice little thing. I mean, I'm happy mostly for Nick Nurse and his staff because they get to go and they get to be part of the festivities. Maybe it sucks that they don't get on vacation, but still, like, it's a cool experience. And it would be a great way to tribute and an honor and just reward Nick Nurse and recognize him for what he's done because, man, you know. And we might see the first ever boxing one in the
That'd be hilarious.
That would be amazing.
But I will add, because I've also been high on, like, I've told many Raptors fans, like, don't get too excited about 2021 because I'm very worried about the Heat in 2021.
Yeah.
It's either Nurse or Spoelstra.
Yep.
Coaching Giannis.
Okay, Raptors, you got to go all out, so, man. All out. 45 minutes for Kyle Lowry tonight against the Hawks. Yeah. You saw that Giannis call, Robert. They were in France for as part of the
About Masai?
Yeah, in international games. And you know, it's a bit thirsty to read all that into something bigger. But, you know, he did say that him and Masai had a conversation. And one of the things they talked about was obviously the expansion of the NBA Africa League. And that was among other things. And he had big plans. So even just putting aside all the thirst stuff, we know definitively that Masai and Giannis have a relationship.
Yep. Thirst away.
And Masai's got big things. I can only imagine. I'm just going to say, man, Masai's a very persuasive man. If you have a conversation, you have a relationship with this man. You know?
That's what I'm saying.
He might sell you on something.
If the Bucks don't win a title in the next two seasons and...
listen, if they don't win this year after they win 70-something games...
and then they got to worry about Giannis going into rooms with Masai Ujiri and Pat Riley. Jeez. Just start burning the jerseys now, Milwaukee. We know you're going to.
Oh, God. Cream City.
Yeah. Well, that city's cream, all right.
Oh, God. Yeah, it really is. One issue that I'm a little concerned about is becoming a trend. It's hard to find issues in a 7-game win streak. But, you know, one of the things I may worry about in terms of the Raptors going perfect this week, despite being an easy schedule, is the fact that they've been giving up some leads. Against the Spurs, they're up 19. And then the Spurs came back and actually took the lead, and the Raptors had to come back and grab that win. Against the Hawks, they're up 20-plus. And then obviously that game ended a very, very, very riveting ending on Martin Luther King Day. OKC, they're up 30. Game became a one-possession game. Before that, they lost that game against the Spurs where they're up, you know, 15 points at least. And then Portland, same kind of deal. Are you worried about this? Is there something the Raptors are doing that's making them give up leads?
I mean, I think they are – I think one thing is they're rolling with a deeper rotation than they were early in the season. Like, if you take some of those games and cut it to a 7- or 8-man rotation,
yep,
right? A healthy rotation, because some of those were when they were still a little banged up, I think.
Yeah, they were. Portland, for sure.
So if you take some of those games and make it like a 7- or 8-man rotation where all of their big guns are playing heavy minutes, I don't think they're blowing those leads. And yeah. I think that's one reason I'm not too concerned about it, because come April, May, and June, like, Patrick McCaw, I hope to God, isn't playing the minutes he played. And some, and like,
well, look,
I don't want to rag on him. I know he's hurt, and I know
he literally has a broken nose right now.
And I know people have already ragged on him, and I know that, you know, he's not the only issue, but go back and watch some of those blown leads.
Yeah.
A lot of it happened because
McCaw's the only ball handler.
He was supposed to be initiating the offense, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I hear you. There are some reasons for concern there. You'd prefer a team just kind of like stay sharp throughout, be a little more professional when playing from ahead. But I also don't think there's that much to read into it.
Yeah. And I mean, not to compare us to the Minnesota Timberwolves of all teams, but the Timberwolves last night against the Kings were up 17 points with 2 minutes and 49 seconds left. And they lost.
For their 10th loss in a row.
Yeah.
Which is their second longest losing streak of the season, by the way.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, like, I actually do think it's just, like, a reality of the NBA nowadays. Like, teams are so good at shooting threes. Teams are so good at playing up-tempo that if you relax for a second, like, it's not about the total points. It's the amount of possessions.
Yes.
And teams are now playing more full-court press, which I actually do think is Nick Nurse's his own stuff coming back to bite him. It's actually interesting to see a lot of coaches in the NBA sort of bite Nick Nurse's stuff. Like Steve Kerr, for example, on Christmas when the Warriors upset the Rockets, he actually used a lot of the same tactics that Nick Nurse did.
On Steph in the finals.
Yeah.
Oh, or sorry, you mean on
James Harden.
On James this year, yes. Yeah.
And that really stuck out to me, because if there's one team and one coach that knows how to play against James Harden, it's the freaking Golden State Warriors and Steve Kerr. They played them like every single year in the playoffs and beat them. But Steve Kerr, obviously with the new roster and everything like that, because of injuries, he borrowed Nick Nurse's defensive scheme to do that. And I do think when you full court press and stuff like that, like you saw against OKC, like it really does speed up the pace of the game. And when you're down, you want to create more possessions, you want to create more opportunities for threes. And it's just really hard to hold the lead right now, man.
It is. That's another reason why I'm not that concerned about it. You know, it's not like the Raptors are some outlier here that are blowing leads. There's more possessions. There's teams getting a lot more creative with their defense, maybe because of Nick Nurse when they are down big.
Right.
That Atlanta game is a perfect example. Like they were running a full court press.
Yep.
And for much of that time, the Raptors were relying on Patrick McCaw and a rookie in Terrence Davis to break that press.
Or even Norman Powell, who had a couple really bad turnovers in that stretch too. Yeah. I do think that part of it is also they were trying to keep Fred on more of a minutes limit. I think since he's come back, he's really proven that he's balling since he's come back. I mean, honestly, I'm not saying he should be an all-star, but he's making a late all-star.
If he had stayed
push.
Healthy, he might have been.
Yeah. He really might have been, man. I mean, you look at Fred's numbers. I still can't believe it. He's averaging 18 points a game this season. Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I think because of the minutes restriction, they've done a really good job with minutes for Kyle. He hasn't really played that many minutes. He gets up to 37, but we're not talking about, like, the 42, 43-minute efforts that he was doing before. So in order to buy them that rest, they need that third point guard on the floor. And that third point guard happened to be Pat McCaw, and, you know.
I mean, it's not. In reality, he is not the third.
Yeah.
But Nick Nurse seemed to believe he was.
Yeah, and normally, in important moments, you would have Fred and Kyle, one of them on the floor at all times. They can do that. You can stagger the rotation and have them both start. You can do that. But in the regular season, you obviously want to give those guys a bit of a break and extend your rotation. And I think that's where, again, you open up a little bit of a weakness, and teams sort of pounce on that a little bit. So And I think also it's like once you blow one lead, teams scout you. They're like,
yeah, no, it's
this is
true.
How they blew last lead. Let's keep doing that.
Yeah.
So it's one thing. I mean, in terms of just progression, like at least the Raptors against the zone, since everyone's come back, much, much better.
I mean,
like, Spurs tried to zone them. Man, Marcus, there were some beautiful passes.
That's the thing. When everyone was going nuts about the way the Raptors were getting zoned, like I remember that game in Miami. And and I was tweeting it that night. I was like, yo, just.
Bro, they're playing with G-leaguers.
Teams will not be able to do this with Marc Gasol in the center of the court. He's too good of a playmaker.
Yeah.
His vision is too good for teams to do this against them.
Yeah.
And that's why I was never worried about it. Like, it's not a viable strategy against the Raptors if Marc Gasol is in the lineup.
And yeah, in that Spurs game, man. Marc had some beautiful, beautiful passing sequences. Like, guys missed shots, but still, the ball movement with Marc back in the lineup is just different. Yep. I mean, honestly, everyone looks great right now. There's not much to nitpick at. We're going to take a quick break right here, and I'm going to tell you that baseball has hot dogs, football has nachos, so when does basketball get its official food? How about right now? Kentucky Fried Chicken, the official food of basketball. Think about it. Basketball players make buckets all the time. KFC makes buckets all the time, and theirs are filled with fried chicken, like famous original recipe, or crispy popcorn chicken, or even juicy tenders. So that settles it. KFC, the official food of basketball. Order at KFC.ca and get it before tip-off. All right, before we go, two more things I want to touch on in terms of the Raptors. Number one, Pascal Siakam getting back to form. You saw in that Knicks game, obviously, he sort of made those two big plays at the end, driving in for a dunk and also hitting the pull-up three. And then you also saw in the Spurs game, breaking a franchise record for points in a quarter with 25, and he finishes 35 of that one. Obviously, didn't finish the game as strong as he started the game, but what are you seeing from Pascal? Are you more encouraged now that he's – are you relieved? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm – like, I was never that concerned. I definitely thought some of his struggles were he just didn't have that same... he didn't seem like he had the ability to have that, like, burst he usually has consistently for the full 48-minute game. And I think that was always kind of part of what made Pascal so special, right?
Is
that, you know, whether it was, like, his second jump on an offensive rebound or the amount of ground he could cover defensively. Like, you'd watch him in the first quarter, you could watch him at the end of overtime, and he would have that same burst, even though it didn't make any sense as a human being to have that burst. When he first came back from injury, I didn't think he had that anymore. Like, even that first Spurs game when they lost, and he came out gangbusters at the start. At the end of the game, he had nothing left. He missed that layup at the end.
A flat-out layup.
Looked like he could not get off the floor.
Yeah.
And so I figured that once he got his legs back under him, he'd be fine, and I think we kind of seen that in the last two games. Now, I don't think he should have got player of the week, but, you know, all good. He had good numbers on a team that
undefeated,
went perfect for the week.
A little strange.
But even in the last San Antonio game, I think even though his scoring didn't keep up as the game wore on, because he was not going to score 100 points, which is the pace he was on after a quarter.
Hey, man, listen.
I thought still looked fine, like energy-wise and burst-wise in the fourth quarter, even if he wasn't scoring. And I really do think that's so important for him and the Raptors, for him to be able to play with that sustained energy throughout.
And I thought one of the biggest plays of the game was Pascal. They were running plays for Pascal in crunch time, which I feel like they still could do a better job of. They're, you know, just in terms of like, where is he comfortable? What is he
want to do? Especially against teams that can't guard him.
Yeah, but like they did a really good job in crunch time of using that ball screen from Fred. And getting the switch, going up against guys like Bryn Forbes or going up against a guy like DeMar DeRozan, and really using that to get Derek White off of him. Derek White was probably the only guy that was giving him slight problems, but not really. Getting the mismatch and then having him attack. And, you know, I thought the play of the game from that one was Pascal coming off the screen, attacking the paint aggressively, forcing the help, and then kicking it right out to Fred VanVleet, who had relocated from the spot that he had set the screen so the defender didn't know which way to close out to because he had his back turned to the play. And Pascal kicks it out to Fred, and Fred hits the three. I just think that like it's not about Pascal having to take every shot. I'm not expecting him to do what he did in the Knicks game every single night on every single possession. That's not how anything is played. That's not even how Kawhi played. But you know, that aggression to even draw a double team and make the right play and stuff like that. He has capable teammates around him. Like, listen, I'll take my chances with Fred VanVleet hitting an open three in crunch time in any time, you know?
Man, I'll take – at this point, since May, I'll take my chances with Fred VanVleet hitting a crunch time three with his back turned 48 feet away from the basket. Yeah. Like, this guy's become as automatic as it gets.
I mean, that Philly game?
Crunch time situations.
That Philly game?
Yeah.
It's night and day. I couldn't believe it.
He took the game over.
Yeah, Fred VanVleet. And people were making fun of him.
Against the team that should give him the most problems because of all the length they have and his size.
Yeah, no, I saw one Philly blogger tweeted out a picture of Isaiah Thomas on the Cavs, and it said, this is Fred VanVleet against the Sixers.
And then by the end of that game, he was the best player on the court.
Yeah. No, shout out Fred, man. He's been really good. He's really solved a lot of crunch time things. And also, I've really enjoyed this stretch where Pascal's come up clutch, Kyle's come up clutch, Fred has come up clutch. And those are your three guys that you're going to look to. And I'm really happy about that. The other thing I want to touch on before I let you go, of late, Norm Powell has been closing over over OG Anunoby. I think it speaks to two things. One, Norm Powell playing like just a star, honestly.
What is it now, 10, 11 games where he's more? I think it's like 11 or 12 games where he's averaging 21, 22 points on better than 50, 40, 90 splits.
Yeah, it's
not like three games, not four. It's like 11 or 12 games.
With a gap in between. Yeah. So that consistency has really held up for him. I mean, Norm, yeah, he's playing really well. I mean, but, it also kind of speaks to the fact that OG Anunoby, he just hasn't been as prominent a part of a game in the last couple of days here. If you look at it, OG had that stretch where he scored 21 against OKC and he scored 18 against Washington. Now, both those games, the Raptors played the big lineup to start, and he's playing shooting guard. Maybe that's correlated or not. I'll ask you in a second. But, I mean, and it also kind of just speaks to OG not being that good. I mean, like, OG had 2 points against Minnesota, did not really show up for that one. Atlanta, 4 points. You know, again, not really a game where he came in and made that big of an effort. Philly had 0 points, scoreless. Norm closed out that
game. The old Embiid.
Yeah. Actually, though, that is really the Embiid now. The next game, OG came back in, you know, made a couple of plays at the end, but still 7 points. And then 10 points against the Spurs. I thought he was good against the Spurs. But still, even in that game, when he played well against the Spurs, it was still Norm Powell closing it out. Are you in favor of this? Like, are you concerned about this? Is this just a minor thing?
Because I think...
Is this like
Nick I'd be Harris? Concerned if it was like Norm had been doing this for like a week.
Right.
And randomly started taking OG's crunch time minutes. But as I mentioned, like, Norm's been doing this now. If you include that gap in between, like, what, going on a couple months where he's been this hot?
Yeah.
And OG, as you mentioned, is still very inconsistent, especially on the offensive end.
Yeah.
Defensively, I think... At his best, he looks like an all-defensive team type player.
Yep.
But I would argue that even on that end, there are some inconsistencies.
Yep, for sure.
But offensively, he's super inconsistent. Yep. You mentioned him kind of feasting as a shooting guard in those big lineups. Maybe that speaks to the fact that when he has a size advantage, things work for him because it's a size advantage. Like he can just do more when he's got that advantage. Without that size advantage, I don't know that he has the creativity and ability in his offensive game to make something out of nothing, right? And if he doesn't have a size advantage, maybe that just it makes sense that it wouldn't come easy for him.
Yeah.
So maybe that speaks to that. I don't know. But I think as long as Norm is playing the way he's playing...
It's not a problem.
And you can't count on OG for a consistent type of offensive like baseline.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem that they're rolling with Norm.
Yeah. And I do think it's an offense-defense situation, too.
100%.
You know, if you need to protect the lead or whatever, I think it makes more sense to pour OG to be in there. If there's a specific matchup, it makes more sense for OG to be there. But also, like, Norm's playing well, man. So you can't really hate it. And even as a coach, like, you know, you want to win the game. You coach to win the game. You know, Nick Nurse is probably trying to coach to get in the All-Star game right now. And, you know, Norm's probably giving you a better chance of that, realistically, right now than OG. But it's something to look at. I do think I'm keeping my eye on it. I'm trying to see. OG does have these stretches where he fades in and out. Like, he had a three-game stretch where he scored 6 total points.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, whatever. And in the San Antonio game, I thought he was better, but still, he didn't close that game either. And even in that game, you can argue, defensively, you kind of needed him on the floor to guard DeMar, who was causing a lot of problems in the fourth quarter. But they still won with Norm.
Well, I think you can make the argument right now, just in the here and now, Norm's offense and shooting, as crazy as this sounds, has become more dependable night to night than OG's like peak level defense.
Okay. Yeah, I can see it. I really can see it. I mean, and the thing is, like, obviously, OG's much better on offense or on defense than Norm is.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it's also matchup based, but I mean, it's just mostly it's just shout out to Norm, man. He's been amazing on the season. He's shooting 51%, 41 from three. It's not even like it's an aberration. Like, he's literally just averaging 15.6 points per game, shooting 50, 40, and 84 from the free throw
line. It's
insane. That's wild.
He's having an absolutely insane season.
And it doesn't seem like he's stopping, too. Like, in a couple of these games, he got hot from three. Sure, whatever.
Yeah.
You're always going to have a lot of, you know, a very efficient game when you got hot from three. Some of these games, he's not even hitting threes. Like, and he's still doing well, and he's still, you know.
Even some of the dunks he's thrown down.
Yeah. That one where he lost he had his back to the play.
Yeah.
And dunked on Horford.
Like, getting to the rim has never been his problem.
Yeah.
I used to joke that he was undefeated in getting to the rim
yep.
and winless in doing anything once he got there because for whatever reason, yeah. he just couldn't finish once there. Now he's finishing once he gets there.
Yeah.
And if you combine those two things, a guy that really can't be denied in getting to the rim despite some size limitations,
yep.
who can now finish at a good rate at the rim, that's, you know, that's easy money every game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's it continues to be so impressive. He's shooting 68% at the rim this season for a shooting guard that's like 6'4 at most.
With, I think, a 6'11 wingspan. Which
he does have a huge wingspan.
A defensive thing, I guess, but...
Yeah. No, man, things are going well with the Raptors. I think, you know, there's not much to complain about, and we'll check back in a week when Nick Nurse is officially announced as the coach of the 2020 All-Star Game of Team Giannis. It would be... It'd be nice. It'd be nice for everyone involved.
Let's I'm thirsty.
I'm thirsty too, but I'm trying to keep it in check. So, Cash, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Long live Kobe.
Yeah, seriously. Rest in peace to Kobe, Gianna. You know, our best wishes to Vanessa and the rest of his daughters. It must be just a horrendous time for them. And, you know, I saw a really good tweet yesterday that I thought just, you know, spoke very eloquently of the situation. I don't even know who it is. Someone on Twitter named Tyler said, if you want to see Kobe, he's all around us. He's Devin Booker's post-up game. He's DeMar DeRozan's footwork. He's Kyrie Irving's clear out and let me go on one-on-five mentality. He's LeBron's leadership. He's Luka Doncic, Trae Young, and so many other emerging stardom. He is eternal.
That's great.
And I think that's...
That's so well put.
Yeah. I mean, that's... You know, that says it all, really. You know, like, legends really do live forever in sort of the people that they inspire. And, you know... You know, people die twice. They really do. You know, athletes actually, you know, it's three times for athletes because they retire once. But, you know, you die the day that you leave the earth, and then you die the next day when, the next time when, you know, your name is no longer spoken of.
Yeah, remember your name.
And that, I don't think that's going to happen for a very, very long time. So, yeah. Thanks for coming on. Listen to Pound the Rock.
Please do.
Listen to Pound the Rock. You guys did a Kobe tribute as well.
We did, yesterday.
So I got to get to that because this whole thing is just bumming me out so much. Yeah. It's hard to get into
it. No, I know. It's hard to consume all of the Kobe content right now.
But, yeah, you and Wolf on holding it down, baby.
As are you
I
here,
man.
As
I miss you guys, here. Man.
We all miss each other.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to KFC for sponsoring the podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And I'll be back next week for more of the Raptors Over Everything podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.